case, Simon versus Government of the Virgin Islands.
Morning, may it please the court. Daniel Lader, on behalf of Appellant Carl Simon. I'd like to reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Okay.
So, Your Honors, this case presents an interesting and somewhat rare and fading question of law. And I say fading because it only applies to a limited time period that at some point in the most likely near future, there'll be no more similarly situated individuals to whom this would apply. However, for the appellant, this is a very important question of law for this court to decide. The question is whether, in the relic system of appellate review, which is why we're here today, even though litigation started in the then territorial court, whether the federal statutes for appointed counsel apply when passing through the district court as well as this court. And I submit that it must, and it is not interchangeable, even if there is an appointment potential in the territorial court.
So you agree, counsel, this is not final order that you're appealing. This has got fit into the interlocutory exception.
Yes, I would agree that it needs to, and that it does fit the Cohen factors.
All right.
And that's simply a facet of the nature of this claim, what I've just went through, that if we weren't here today, if this court didn't agree that it had appellate jurisdiction, and the Superior Court, or the now Superior Court, used to be the Territorial Court, appointed counsel, this question of law would never be answered. This would never go up on appellate review.
Well, was the remand in this case a record remand or a case remand?
I believe it was a record remand.
Okay.
That this court ordered.
And if it's a record remand, that means that there's something further for the appellate court to do later, right?
Correct.
Okay. And if that's true, well, let me just shift gears. You made a mootness argument, right? Is there some kind of an argument that the denial of counsel is unreviewable because it may become moot if the Superior Court appoints counsel?
Yes, it would be.
In that argument,
my interpretation of how that would play out would be this: if this question of law wasn't resolved here in the Superior Court appointed counsel. And petitioner, whether or not was successful on habeas and obtaining a new trial, the issue would be only whether he had ineffective assistance of counsel because he was appointed counsel. Therefore,
right.
So the federally appointed counsel.
What's the harm at that? I mean, I guess.
Well, it seems like you're asking what the practicalities are, and
no, that's the legal question you're raising, because it seems what the legal claim you're saying is that you should have been appointed counsel.
I think
just let me finish. Judge Jordan is asking, hey, what happens if you are appointed counsel? What is the live legal question then that you're still claiming needs to be reviewed by this court?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's the interaction between the legal question and the practicalities. So on the legal side, appointment under the federal statutes is not the same as appointment under local VI law. And the practical realities of those differences means that the funding of the litigation, and this is aside from simply paying the attorney's rates, even if the Virgin Islands has a policy of cutting the time in half and paying the hourly rate based on a reduced amount of hours. This is about more than that. It's about funding the needs of the litigation to uphold the petitioner's constitutional and statutory rights.
So just to be perfectly clear, it's not deprivation of counsel you're arguing. It's deprivation of some some right to have a different funding source, a more complete funding source for overall defense? That's the argument.
That's
either way. I mean, I don't know if I'm saying the gentleman's name right, but Judge Francois, I hope I'm saying it right, he has said, "I'll appoint you. I'll put you in," and that's been rejected. So it can't be the right to counsel that's at issue, can it?
It could be, because the Superior Court already expressly said that they would appoint. In this case, it wouldn't boil down to that, but it could be in the sense that the rules governing 2254 and 2255 require appointment when an evidentiary hearing is required. And that's not necessarily the same under VI law. So there could be a differing, a divergence between the right to appoint a counsel in some cases, but as you pointed out, that hasn't occurred here. But my point is that federally appointed counsel and VI appointed counsel are not necessarily, they are distinction with a difference, in the sense that the federal court, if appointed under these federal statutes, as we argue should occur, will be making decisions of whether expenditures for instance, off-island deposition that would have to go through the Uniform Deposition and Discovery Act are warranted. It would make funding decisions that directly affect petitioners' rights.
I'm not suggesting that those things wouldn't have some real world significance, but does that impact the collateral order doctrine here? I mean, would you agree that it's a speaking of distinctions with the difference, it's a big difference to say I'm being deprived of the right of counsel and saying I'm being deprived of the right to have the counsel appointed by somebody who will pay better. Those are two awfully big, there's a real gap between those two arguments, right?
Yes, well, I would.
Yeah, I agree. There's a pretty big gap between those two. So does that gap affect the collateral order analysis in any way? Because it's got to be a really important question. And so help me with that.
I believe it does. I believe the question is whether you have the right, or at least the right to consideration of federally appointed counsel under the CJA or 28 USC section 1915. I believe that is an important question of law compared to the potential future right after subsequent remand to have counsel appointed under local Virgin Islands law. That's a question of law that, because the case wasn't stayed, we already have the answers to what
the Superior. Let's assume we agree it is an important question, right? And let's assume we agree too that it's separate from the main issue. You still need to show that it's effectively unreviewable. So suppose the VI court appoints counsel, and that appointed counsel wants to take steps in the litigation that the court feels cannot be done pursuant to the cost structure the counsel's proposing. In other words, they won't pay as well as counsel wants to take the steps. Isn't that a potential deprivation that would then be subject to challenge in the VI courts and ultimately reviewed by the VI Supreme Court? In other words, why wouldn't that funding gap issue that you're raising be present in the territorial courts, the superior courts, so that it remains effectively reviewable?
I believe that's because of Section 1613 D, which continues this line of appellate review. It won't go from the Superior Court to the Virgin Islands Supreme Court. It will go back to the district court appellate level and then this court. But if
that's how it happens, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
If that's how it happens, then it's not effectively unreviewable, right? Because you're in the federal system at that point. You're on appeal to the appellate division. And our Smith Bay case says that's the kind of thing that can be reviewed later. No?
Your Honor, it is a complicated issue that I believe would be subject to arguments from both sides if it were hypothetically to go there. I would say that if the Superior Court appointed counsel and went all the way through habeas, whether successful or not, and whether a new trial or not, and went on that, progressed through that appeal, the argument would be made that the petitioner appellant accepted counsel from the Superior Court and waived the right to counsel under the federal statutes, and the question of law would never get answered and resolved.
I don't know. I'm not sure why you think it would never get answered, because I think I've heard your argument right, and your argument is this is going to come back up in front of the appellate division. If that's the track it takes, and you're right, there's a shelf life on this, right? This is not the sort of thing that's likely to happen again. But if it comes back in front of the appellate division, and you're arguing in front of the appellate division, I guess I'm just curious why Smith Bay doesn't apply, and we're right where Judge Mady said we are.
I view it as an endless cycle. I think the same thing would I think the issue of appointment here now would be off the table, and the appellant would have to move for appointed counsel again at the district court level, but it would be a new question at that time rather than resolving the issue here today.
Okay. Thank you. Judge Roth, anything from you, ma'am?
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we'll have you back on rebuttal, Mr. Lader, and we'll ask Mr. Clement to come forward on behalf of the.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning, Your Honors. Assistant Attorney General Ian Clement on behalf of the Government of the Virgin Islands. The court has honed in on the real issues here in this case, and that is counsel's desire to have the federal government pay their fees rather than the territorial government. And while it's true that under the CJA panel, they are paid more, probably paid more regularly than under the territorial court, this appeal that we're hearing today has nothing to do with Mr. Simon's right to an attorney, because as the court has pointed out, Judge Francois has offered to appoint Attorney DeRuzzo to be counsel, which he has eschewed. The second thing I want to point out is that I believe this is a case remand and not a record remand.
You think it's a case remand?
Yes, Your Honor, because the original case, this court held that the Superior Court denied the habeas petition without an evidentiary hearing. When this case was remanded finally in 2019, I don't believe I saw anything about retaining jurisdiction.
Well, this went back for two reasons, right? Mm-hmm. A Brady claim and a conflict of interest claim.
That's right, Your Honor.
In both those instances, isn't the practical effect of what the panel said, look, there's not enough of a record here, we can't decide this, there's got to be more fact finding.
Right.
Isn't that kind of the definition of a record remand? Take it back, make more of a record, and that way, and then it can be reviewed, because now it's not enough to be reviewed. Why isn't that straight up a record remand?
The court could find that if you're going to review it based upon that.
Okay. It could be. If it is a record remand, then we've got appellate jurisdiction, and then the question becomes the one we were pressing on Mr. Lader, correct? Which is, if this comes back up and it comes back up to the appellate division,
right?
Then we're in a situation where you don't have finality, because it can be reviewed at the end, or at least that's what Smith Bay seems to say. From your perspective, I thought you'd kind of like that outcome, but if you're saying it's a case remand, we don't get there. So I'm a little curious why you're fighting that, but
okay.
If we've got appellate jurisdiction, at the end of the day, do you win anyway or not?
Well, yeah, under Smith Bay, we do, but the district court found that this is a local matter to be handled under in the local courts, and just following beyond that, that it's a matter of who should pay. If you have a local habeas, not a 2254, right, based on local law, it's going to be tried, or the hearing will be heard in a local court, then the federal statutes, whether it be 1915 or 3006A, with respect to appointing counsel don't apply. Mm-hmm. And so that the issue of appointing counsel, the court did not abuse its discretion by just referring this to the Superior Court, in which when that happened, the Superior Court readily said, yeah, we will appoint counsel to this case.
Well, do you, you know, I, let me ask you this. What do you think will be the root of this case following the evidentiary here? Is your opposing counsel correct that this is likely to go to the appellate division afterwards? Or is it going to go to the VI Supreme Court?
Well, if the case has to come back to this court based upon further findings, and it would have to come back through the appellate division. But if the Superior Court then, after conducting the evidentiary hearing, decides that it to deny the habeas, then that would be appealed to the Supreme Court.
Is that true? If they said, here's our, this is the evidentiary record, and we deny habeas. I mean, the fact that they take a step and issue a ruling, mm-hmm. is that the thing that's going to determine where it goes? Because that
would then, if habeas is denied at that point, that would be a final order under 4 VIC 32A would go to the Supreme Court on appeal.
Well, that's the very question, right? That's right. The very question is, does the Superior Court get to decide by the way it frames its order which route it goes, whether it goes to the VI Supreme Court or back to the appellate division, or is that a function of what we determine our remand was? If we determine it was a record remand and not a case remand,
right,
then it's got to come back to us, right?
Or yes,
say us, I mean through the appellate division and potentially back to us.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the question isn't really whether this Superior Court chooses to issue an order that says habeas denied or not. The question is whether, in our view, what we did was a record remand or a case remand. Am I correct about that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, good. Thank you, that's helpful.
What is the status of appointment in the evidentiary hearing? Where is the-
Matey, could you speak a little louder?
Oh, please? I'm sorry, Judge Roth. Yep, was just asking counsel, what is the status of the evidentiary hearing and the appointment of counsel?
The status of the hearing is we're in discovery, and with respect to appointment of counsel, Judge Francois has offered to appoint Attorney DeRuzzo as counsel on a couple of occasions and status conferences, and he has made it known to the Superior Court, to Judge Francois, that if this appeal is not successful, he will withdraw from the case. So Attorney DeRuzzo is in the case for the time being, but a lot depends on how this court rules, and he can answer that more directly.
Thank you.
Has there been any claim that failure to adequately pay appointed counsel is in and of itself a denial of appointment of counsel?
There's been no claim in this particular appeal that's been brought by counsel in this case, Your Honor.
So the issue then is not the inadequacy, which would be a denial of counsel, but a weighing of who pays better. And should the courts really get into that issue?
Well, this is the crux of our response on appeal, is that this is it's not something for this court to get involved in, and that we are confident that whether the territory pays or whether the federal government pays, the efforts of defense counsel or appellant's counsel, they can speak to this further, would be the same.
Any other questions, Judge Roth?
No further.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Clement. Appreciate your argument. Mr. Lader.
Your honors.
Could you just answer the same question, what the status is of the matter?
Yes. So in the Superior Court, they would not stay the case, or I believe this court wouldn't issue an order or stay in the case. So it is proceeding in discovery. There was a motion to compel production of evidence that was the administrative record of both appellant and the accomplice from back in 1994, who was the subject of the potential Brady violation. And it became apparent, well, the Superior Court granted the motion to compel, and the government provided sworn affidavits that a search was conducted and everywhere they would think to look. And not only is some evidence missing, all of it's gone. So there is an outstanding motion for sanctions based on spoliation of the evidence. And that actually underscores the importance of the issue here to appellant, because assuming he prevails and has to get a new trial, but even in the habeas proceedings, this is going to be a momentous amount of effort to get off-island depositions to, you know, there's going to be an extraordinary amount of cost that will have to be provided by some governmental entity to uphold appellant's rights.
Mr. Clement correct that your firm's position, Mr. DeRuzzo's position, is if I'm not paying it under the CJA, I'm withdrawing. I'm out of the case.
That's correct, because he's not on the local level panel. He's not on the territorial panel.
Well,
so appointed counsel might be provided, but it won't be Mr. DeRuzzo.
When you say it won't be Mr. DeRuzzo, that's not what I'm hearing. I'm not hearing that the government's not willing to appoint him. Judge Francois said, I'll appoint you. What it sounds like is, from what I'm hearing, is Mr. DeRuzzo saying, if I'm not getting paid out of the surer bucket, the better bucket, which is apparently what's going on here, the federal government will pay more timely or pay more and it'll cover more things, then I'm out. Is that the practicality of it?
I believe so, Your Honor. But to go back to why Smith Bay does not apply and the issue of law, is assume whether or not it was Mr. DeRuzzo or another local level appointed counsel, the issue would be, the claim would be that the local Virgin Islands government is underfunded the needs of the litigation, which would go up on review, even following this track to eventually this court. It would be an abuse of discretion standard under local VI law, because that's where the appointment came from. And it would not be analyzed under the CJA or Section 1915 standards. And the question of law will never be answered, which is why this unique design takes it out of the umbrella of Smith Bay.
But there has been no claim made that the Virgin Islands appointment of counsel system is so underpaid, so improvident, that it amounts to a denial of counsel. Is that correct?
No, that's correct. It's not been claimed that it amounts to a denial of counsel. It's only been framed as the fact that these are different questions. These are different questions of law that different practicalities follow. And so, and I don't believe it's in the record whether or not the Virgin Islands has a policy of reducing costs and fees awarded, but I don't believe it's necessary for this court to conclude that Smith Bay does not apply, because this is a very unique system. This isn't the same scenario that would occur in Smith Bay, where even though you might have to wait a long, long time to get a new trial and to say, disqualification of counsel or failure to appoint counsel entitles me to a new trial. That is the same question that's being answered in the Smith Bay context, whereas here we're asking for appointment under CJA or Section 1915, and that question won't arise if there's appointment under VI, even if they're similar. The point is, they are not the same. They're not interchangeable. They're two different bodies of law, and one will be answered on appeal and one will not.
Even though they're not the same, there is no allegation that one is inadequate to amount to appointment of counsel, right?
Correct. No one has ever asserted that one is so bad that it's absolute denial of counsel, even if used.
Okay, I think we've got your argument. Thank you, Mr. Lader. We've got the case under advisement. And